Kobolds at the bottom of the hill made me almost gag. It smelled like burnt dog hair with a side of boiled shit, and I took a few steps upwind from the hideous remains. It was then that I beheld Nika standing naked in the sunlight with her arms raised high and a look of pure ecstasy on her beautiful face. Her body had been beautiful in the glow of the crystals, but in the sunlight cast by the holy twins, her true beauty was revealed to me. Her light jade-colored skin took on a softer tone in the brilliant rays, and her hair became a rich, luminescent candy red. Nika spun in circles beneath the suns and laughed as she shed tears of joy. Her happiness choked me up a bit. It was like seeing someone wrongly imprisoned for a crime they didn't commit finally being set free. Her joy was infectious, and I couldn't help but laugh with her as she danced in the world of light.
"Oh, Kenjul, it is beautiful, just beautiful," she said and turned round and round like an overwhelmed kid in a candy shop.
We had come out on a northern-facing hillside that overlooked a snaking river. The lead sun had begun to set in the west, and the other one looked to be about 6 hours behind the first. I couldn't see what lay north of the cave we had emerged from, but a thick forest and slowly rolling hills surrounded us to the east and west. Nika ran toward the river to the south, and I grabbed the discarded t-shirt and hurried to catch up. Before I could warn her against leaping into the unknown river, she was already diving into the water.
"Swim with me," she laughed and splashed me. "The water is so warm."
Before I could answer, her face lit up as though she had just realized something incredible.
"No, let's make love on the grass. Sex with you the first time was wonderful, and I can't even imagine what sex with you with the sunlight on my skin will feel like."
She emerged from the river, and I took a moment to admire her glistening form. Nika's body was amazing, but what made it even more appealing was her personality. It seemed that nothing could bring her down, and her positive attitude was infectious. She was almost always smiling, and her warm gaze was like a ray of sunshine every time it found me. She had brightened the underdark with her mere existence, and now she made the bright surface world that much more wondrous as well. I had only known her a short time, but I realized that I was falling for her. Nika was an enthusiastic lover, and her passion was matched only by her curiosity for each different sexual position that I introduced her to. We made love on the riverbank as the first sun set in the west, and our simultaneous orgasm was met with magnificent hues of orange, red, and purple that burst through the clouds triumphantly. Then we fell asleep in each other's arms. While I slept, I dreamed that kobolds chased me through the ancient site in Syria. The monsters in my dreams were not the tiny versions found in the Underdark, but 100-foot-tall monsters who shot lasers out of their eyes. In my dream, I had to choose between either saving my squadron or saving Nika, but I had tried to do both. The twin suns shone brightly overhead and glared down at me like the burning eyes of a god. The kobolds stormed through the ancient site and crushed pillars beneath their gargantuan feet. Their spears were the length of sequoia trees, and the weapons shattered sandstone walls and ancient temples. On one side of the site, Nika hung from a giant mushroom that grew out of the desert floor. On the other side, Johnson and McAllister hung from a mammoth crystal that protruded from the desert sand at a 60-degree angle. I hid behind the Temple of Nabu and radioed in an airstrike as the giant kobolds broke off into two groups of seven. One group charged toward Nika, and the other group descended upon my soldiers. But I could only target one of the groups for the airstrike. It was my soldiers or Nika, and I had to choose. I jolted awake beside the river and shot upright. Nika's soft hand on my shoulder made me jump, but then I realized where I was and let out a long sigh.
"Are you all right?"
the beautiful woman asked as her eyebrows lifted with concern. "Yeah, it was only a bad dream." I shook off the remnants of the nightmare and glanced at the sky. The first sun had set, so I checked my watch. It had been set to Syrian time, and the device reported that it was 6 in the morning there. A day and night had passed on Earth, but on the strange planet where I was, nighttime hadn't even begun. I wouldn't know exactly how the days were here until the suns were in the same position as they were when I landed in the ocean, but I guessed they were about 36 or 40 hours away from that time. One thing I did know, however, was that the second sun would be setting soon. I held my hand up and counted 3 fingers from the sun to the horizon. This rough measurement would indicate 3 hours on Earth until sunset, but I guessed that I had upwards of 5 on this planet. It was time to get some food in my belly and start working on setting up our camp. I could make a decent lean-to with the tarp and my molly pack, but first I would need a fire.
"What are you doing?"
Nika asked as she yawned and stretched with a happy smile.
"Setting up camp. You want to help?" I asked.
"Of course, silly. I'm your wife."
I didn't argue with that, and I kind of liked the sound of it. The thought of introducing her to my parents forced a laugh out of me, and I was thankful that Nika didn't ask what I found so funny. We gathered some pine pitch along with dead twigs and branches, and once we had a good pile built, I set to starting a fire. It would come in handy keeping wild animals away, and that outweighed my worry over humans spotting it. I had absolutely no idea what kind of beasts lurked in the forests of the surface world, and I didn't think Nika did either. Even if there was nothing exotic in the woods, there was likely to still be bears, wildcats, and wolves. This new world was strange, but it was much like Earth in terms of flora and fauna. I gathered some Big River rocks and placed them in a 2-foot-wide circle about 10 feet from the riverbank. Then I bunched up some dried needles and twigs that we had gathered and mixed in some dead grass and the pine pitch. Once I had built up my wood like a hollow log cabin, I placed the ball of pitch and sticks in the center. Nika watched with amazement as I tried to light the wad with my magnesium fire starter, and she clapped and cheered when it finally caught fire.
"You are magic, Kenjul," she merrily declared.
"Don't goblins have fire?" I asked. When I found her, there had been a torch in the chamber with her, after all.
"Of course we do, silly, but we don't know how to make it like you. Our fire has been in the clan for centuries. It is said that a great goblin adventurer brought it from the surface world long, long ago."
"Do goblins come up to the surface often? I met a farmer who told me that sometimes monsters come out of the Underdark at night to raid," I said.
"War parties come to the surface sometimes," she explained, "but not much lately. They've been too busy trying to fight back the kobolds and the vengeful dwarves."
My stomach growled and Nika giggled.
"Are you as hungry as I am?" I asked her.
"Starved," she said.
"All right, I'll see if I can catch some fish in the river." I slapped my molly pack. "I've also got some food in here if you want to try it. A half a soldier fuel energy bar opened anyway. I'd like to save the other stuff, though, as it lasts a really long time and might come in handy if we get in a bind."
"You are a very good provider, Kenjul," she said with a delightful smile.
"Thank you," I said as I gave her a kiss. Merely being around Nika put me in a good mood, and I thanked my lucky stars once again that I had run into someone like her.
"I can think of something else I'd like to eat,"
she whispered in my ears as she pulled me down with her and snaked her hand under my pants.
"You're insatiable," I told her and gave her a few playful kisses of my own.
My lips flirted in the shadow of her cleavage, then I dotted kisses down her belly and lingered near her hot spot.
"I have to get back to work," I said after I gave her one final kiss and pulled away from her.
"Hey, no fair,"
she pouted as she squirmed on the grass with pent-up passion.
"First things first, dear. We need to eat."
I like the sound of that," she purred.
I grabbed my spade out of my molly pack. It still had some kobold blood on it, so I washed it in the river. Once it was clean, I used it to dig a few shallow holes by the bank.
"What can I do to help?"
Nika asked. She came to kneel beside me in my camo t-shirt, and I was once again taken by how damn cute she was. Her full, dark green lips were so inviting that I could hardly keep my eyes off of them.
"You can gather some worms and grubs if you want," I said, and she set about the work happily.
This was all a grand adventure for her, and it was for me as well. We were kindred spirits in a strange new land, and it was us against the world. It seemed that fate had brought us together, and I thought about the long odds against us ever having met. I was no mathematician, but I knew they really weren't good odds. I had a fishing kit and the survival pack on my utility belt, but I had hooks and line in my survival knife as well. The army left it up to us to provide ourselves with our own knives, beyond the standard-issue M9, and I had always opted for a good old 184 Buckmaster. It was a solid survival knife, with an 8-inch blade and a hollow handle that held waterproof matches, fish hooks, and extra line. I used my knife to first shave the bark off two nice straight oak branches that were 7 feet long, then I carved a groove in the thick end of each, about a foot from what were to be the handles. I worked the line around the groove of one and tied it off, then spun the makeshift pole around in my hand to wrap the surrounding line all the way to the end. By tying it off near the handle, I ensured that I wouldn't lose the line if the fish snapped the stick during the fight.
"I have your worms, Kenjul."
Nika walked over to me with a dozen or so worms and a few slugs in my cap.
"Can you teach me how to fish?"
"Sure," I said as she leaned against my shoulder so she could see my fingers work. "First, I'm going to make a slit on the end here."
"Ah."
She stole a kiss and watched with enthusiasm as I carved the pole. Then I run the line through the slit, tie it off like so, and voila, the first pole is ready. I set the pole down against the grass and then gestured to it proudly.
"Oh, let me do the other one,"
she said eagerly, and I grinned at her enthusiasm. "All right, go ahead. Let's see what you've learned." Nika rubbed her green hands together and took the line and the second pole from me. I watched as she tied off the line like I had shown her, twirled the pole like I had said, and then cut a slit in the end. Lastly, she ran the line through the slit, tied it off, and turned to me with a wide grin.
"How does it look?"
"Great," I said. "Now we need to make sure the line floats so that the hook is near the surface."
"You are so smart, Kenjul,"
she said as she rested her chin on my shoulder. I showed Nika how to fashion a bobber out of a few lighter pieces of dry wood, and then I had her do it with her own pole. Her fingers were amazingly dexterous, and she quickly tied her bobbers to the line and then smiled at me. "You did great," I said as my heart filled with pride. "Now comes the sticky part." I retrieved two worms from my cap. They were lively little bastards who had started to crawl their way out along the brim, and I knew that they would perform well underwater. I handed one to Nika, grabbed my hook, and impaled my worm. She made a delightfully gruesome face, stabbed her worm with glee, turned to me and asked,
"Now do we get to eat the worms?"
I burst with laughter.
"What? No, the worms aren't for us, they're for the fish. When the fish go to eat the worm, the hook will stick into their cheek, like this." I hooked my cheek with my finger.
"But they can't slide off the hook, see? It is barbed in the other direction, so it gets stuck. Once we've got the fish hooked, we pull them up on shore."
"Then we eat them?"
she asked, and her stomach growled. "After we cook them over the fire, yes, then we eat them," I said with a laugh.
"Oh, good. I've never eaten fish before. Only merfolk."
Okay, I said with a sideways glance.
"You are very clever, Kenjul,"
she said as she nodded approvingly at me.
"And it was very clever of me to make you my husband. Now teach me how to catch a fish."
"Now we throw the line out into the water," I said as I twisted my arm back and then flipped my hands forward. The hook and bobber flew into the middle of the river, and then I nodded to her pole. She proved a natural when it came to casting the line, and we were soon sitting on the side of the water and chatting about how happy she was to be on the surface. Nika was the first to snag a fish, and I almost fell in the river in my attempt to get to her before she lost it. But she had listened closely, and when the bobber darted below the surface the third time, she had yanked back firmly. As I tripped over my own discarded rod, she began spinning hers in wide arcs and wound the line up the pole, while at the same time tugging back on it occasionally. She whooped and giggled as she pulled in her catch, and I was right there to cheer her on. When the fish flung out of the water and landed on the bank, Nika leapt with delight.
"I got one, I got one,"
she cheered. "Hold on," I said as I grabbed her line and took hold of the slippery fish with expert precision. I offered it to Nika, and she hooked her finger through its gill the way I had shown her, and held it up to admire the catch. She looked to the twin sons with a happy smile, but then her smile faded, and she offered the fish back to me.
"I was going to sacrifice my first catch to the goblin god," said Nika. But I would rather you have it. The gods never answered my prayers anyway. They never stopped the teasing by the other goblins. They didn't rescue me from the Underdark. You did, Kenjul, and I want you to have my first catch instead.
I appreciate the sentiment, Nika, but I can't eat your fish when I know you're as hungry as I am.
But it is a wife's duty to provide for her husband,
she said. It is also a husband's duty to provide for his wife. How about we split it?
Thank you, Kenjul, she giggled. You are such a wonderful husband.
The fish reminded me of a rainbow trout, with multicolored dots speckling its sides and a soft pink underbelly. I accepted the fish from Nika and laid it down on a stone to clean it. Once I had cut off the head and cleaned out the guts, we cooked it over the small fire. The trout was delicious, and Nika moaned and grinned happily as we sat on the bank and watched our bobbers as we ate.
"Fish on," Nika yelled the term that I had taught her. "Your pole is bending, Kenjul."
I snapped myself out of my ponderings, grabbed my pole, and began twisting the line up around it. The fish was a big one, and bent my pole nearly to the breaking point. I yanked back with calculated strength, not too much, not too little, and continued to twist the slack onto the pole. I realized that this fish was much bigger than I had thought, so I moved closer to the riverbank in case I needed to jump in the water and grab it. My fisherman's ego was in full swing, and I was hell-bent on impressing my goblin wife. But when I yanked fiercely on the pole and pulled the catch out of the water, I realized that I hadn't caught a fish at all. A small alligator came scampering out of the water, but I jumped back before it had cleared the river. The creature sat there with a many-toothed grin as we stared each other down, and I could see Nika slowly stalking around to get behind it. For half a moment, I thought about telling her to move away so she wouldn't get bit, but Nika's face showed no fear, just hunger. Then the beautiful goblin woman dove on the alligator's back, clamped down hard on its jaws, and pinned it down. I sprang into action, pulled my buck knife, angled the blade between the creature's eyes, and then thrust the point into its head. The reptile made a gasp, squirmed, and then died a few moments later. As soon as the animal stopped thrashing, Nika looked at me wide-eyed, and we both erupted with laughter. "That was a dangerous thing to do," I warned. She offered me a dubious glance.
"This baby croc is nothing compared to an Underdark basilisk. Some of them grow to 50 feet long."
"Did you do a lot of hunting in the Underdark?" I asked.
"Oh, yes," she said
as she dragged the dead croc up onto the shore and turned it over.
"I used to go off by myself and hunt lizards. This creature is very similar. I think it will be nice and tender, and I can make you something nice out of the hide."
We caught 3 more fish, and Nika's second fish was a whopping 13 inches, but a few minutes later I angled a 15-inch beauty out of the river, and we both laughed as we wrestled it on the shore. I glanced at the second sun as we headed back toward our fire, and I guessed that we had perhaps 1 or 2 hours left until dark. I had been watching the suns closely, and I determined that 2 hours here was equal to 1 hour on Earth. Twilight lasted nearly as long as full daylight due to the lagging second sun. I assumed as well that dawn, the time when only one sun had risen, would last about the same length of time. It was a good thing when the length of a day was considered, but it also meant that nighttime would last upwards of 12 hours. And who knew what came out at night in a place like this? I forgot my worries and cleaned the fish. I had never butchered a crocodile, but Nika said that she had skinned plenty of lizards, and soon she was showing me how it was done.
"This hide will make for good armor," she said as she placed the last piece over the makeshift hanging rack.
"You should fashion something for yourself," I told her. "I can't have my wife running around in my t-shirt all the time." She nodded.
"I will make myself something beautiful for you, Kenjul. You are such a wonderful man. Thank you again for saving me, loving me, and taking me as your wife. I must be the luckiest and happiest goblin girl in the whole world."
Yeah, I'm lucky too. I chuckled as I felt my heart flutter a bit. I knew my way around women, but there was something amazing about Nika. Her smile was so joyful and endearing, and every time she looked at me, I could clearly see the adoration in her eyes. I'd never been around a woman that was this happy to be around me,
and the feeling was all kinds of great. And I knew I was falling in love with her. It was crazy, since it had only been a few hours, but Nika was wonderful, and I wanted to treat her as great as she made me feel. She stared at the fish crackling on the sticks over the fire, and I turned my attention to the setting second sun. A wild dog howled in the distance, and I watched Nika's reaction out of the corner of my eye. She didn't seem to have noticed, but my mind turned back to thoughts about protecting us as we slept. "I better get to work on our tent," I said as I moved toward the pack that I had left leaning up against a tree. "Tell me when the fish is done."
"Yes, Kenjul," she said as she smiled at me.
I took out my tarp and positioned it about 3 feet from the fire. Next, I tied off another branch that I had procured for this very purpose and laid it like a cross against the tall oak. Once the branch was secured, I tied off one end of the tarp to the cross and secured it with makeshift tent poles to the ground. The result was a wide lean-to with one end facing the river and the other facing the hillside. Nika approached me with a big grin on her face, and she hugged me when I emerged from the tent.
"The food is ready, my love."
"Good," I said. "I'm starved." We ate by the fire, and although we had no butter, salt, or pepper, it was the best damn fish I had ever tasted. Nika seemed to be enjoying it too, and she let out plenty of cute moans with each bite.
"Kenjul, are you going to eat the fish heads?"
she asked when she had finished her share. No, I...
"But why not? The heads of creatures have all the bones, brains, and eyeballs. They are the most nutritious parts. As your wife, I think you should eat them."
If you want them, go for it."
"Oh, Kenjul,"
she said as she picked up one of the fish skeletons.
"You are such a loving and caring husband. Giving me your fish heads to eat is one of the nicest things anyone has ever done for me, other than save my life, of course. I am so lucky. Thank you."
When the second sun set in a marvelous display of streaking reds, oranges, violets, and indigos, the stars claimed dominance over the night, and a fat red moon grew in the eastern sky. I beheld the behemoth with a mystified reverence as we lay on the grass next to each other. Back on Earth, we occasionally had what we called the Blue Moon, and it was supposed to be one of the most magnificent displays of celestial beauty to behold, but compared to the crimson moon rising in the east, Earth's Blue Moon was a speck. The red moon grew bigger and brighter while Nika and I watched. It took up the area of 4 of my Earth moons, but its red hue did nothing to obscure the shimmering stars that were brighter than any I had ever seen. New constellations and distant galaxies opened before me, and I wondered where in the night sky my home world was. Eventually, we grew tired of being out in the open and moved inside our lean-to. Once inside, we snuggled up under the blanket that came with my molly pack and poked our heads out beyond the tarp.
"You see those 2 bright stars next to each other?"
said Nika as she pointed straight up.
"Yeah, I see them. They are beautiful."
She nodded.
"They are you and me, the 2 shining jewels. May they forever be known as Ken and Nika, patriarch and matriarch of Clan Jewel."
If I hadn't been so choked up by the statement, I might have replied. Nika's belief in me struck a chord that had never been played by any other woman. I had had girlfriends, sure, but I had never felt what I felt with Nika for any other woman. The realization shocked me, and I thought back on my relationships. I filed through them, mentally reciting everything that had happened, and why in the end it hadn't worked out. It really came down to my job. None of the women I had ever been with could take the months apart, the long tours, or waking up to their boyfriend's nightmares. I didn't know if Nika could handle time apart, but I guessed that she would fight her way to me if need be, and she had already proven herself a kind and understanding soul when it came to my dreams. Of course, I had only recently met her, and the long road was the long road. Sure, feelings for someone new were intense, and only time would tell, but in this strange new world full of strange new creatures, the woman beside me had become the familiar comfort that I realized that I'd always needed. We fell asleep in each other's arms that night beneath the stars, and if night took 12 hours on this world, then it was 12 hours that I slept. When I awoke to the sound of birdsong and the rays of the first sun, I glanced over at Nika, but she wasn't there. Then I heard her retching somewhere in the distance, and I sprang from the tent to see what was wrong. I assumed that the new food had made her sick. But there were two more fish grilling over the fire. I scoured the camp, but there was no Nika in sight.
Nika, I called.
I'll be right there, Kenjul, came her voice from down the riverbank.
She emerged from behind a bush a moment later and walked back to camp with a huge smile on her face.
What's wrong, Nika? What is it? I asked.
Nothing is wrong, she said as her smile grew even wider. Everything is perfect, Kenjul. I'm pregnant.
Chapter 5.
What? You're pregnant? How did that happen? Both my brain and my stomach were spinning in opposite directions, and I had to force myself to breathe slowly. Nika grinned and rubbed her stomach happily.
We had sex, silly. That's how babies are made. Does it work differently on your Earth?
No, it works the same. It just takes a lot longer to, you know, My voice trailed off when I remembered that she'd been a virgin when we had first made love. I had been about to ask her if it was my baby. Are you sure you are pregnant? It's just that we only had sex yesterday and—
Oh, I am sure, Kenjul.
She clapped her hands and then gave me a wonderful smile.
Goblins know really soon if we are pregnant. I am so excited. I've never had a child before, and I am so glad it is with someone as wonderful as you. You are going to be a father.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I paced outside the tent and tried to wrap my mind around the idea of having a baby. Not only that, but a half-goblin baby. Nika walked over to me and blocked my way as I paced.
What is wrong? Don't you want to have children? Don't you want to have a family with me?
Her sad face melted my heart, so I touched her face gently and forced a smile. Of course I want you, and I want a family. But I've barely wrapped my mind around being on a different world, let alone having children to worry about.
You don't have to worry about them,
she promised with her infectious smile.
I told you I would give you strong sons and daughters, and that is what I will do.
I can't imagine having a child in such a wild world, I said to her.
Everything will be fine. You will see. There are dangers, but you are a strong warrior, and you will build us a strong warren.
A warren? What's that?
It is somewhere warm and dry, with shelter, and a bed, and happiness,
she explained. Oh, you mean a house, I realized.
Yes, Kenjul, she said with an agreeable nod. You will make us a house for our new family.
It was hard enough to keep myself out of danger in this world, and I had just gotten used to the idea of fending for Nika as well. Now there was a baby on the way? Holy shit, I was going to be a dad. I imagined what the baby would look like, and if it would be normal, and how the hell I had gotten her pregnant in the first place. She wasn't human, and I wondered if there were other cross-breeds out there. I knew one thing for certain. The villagers from Hampstead would think the child was a freak, and if they discovered that I had brought Nika up to the surface, they would try their utmost to kill us all. Nika was right. I needed to build a house, and not just any house, but one that could be easily defended. I knew it was only a matter of time before we ran into trouble with the locals. I thought back on my old life and realized that aside from my parents and siblings, I wouldn't really be missed. I had been a busy man back on Earth, always moving, always working. My dedication to the military had left me with no real friends and had ruined all my past romantic relationships. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that I didn't really miss Earth at all. My plan had been to find a way home somehow, but I figured that even if it was possible, I couldn't leave Nika and the baby behind. I entertained the idea of bringing them back with me, but I knew that there was absolutely no way that they could live in a world with only humans. No, I needed to stay. I was falling deeper in love with Nika the more time I spent around her, but I was still somewhat nervous to be a father. When I first arrived in this strange new world, I had thought myself cursed, but
but now I was beginning to believe that it was indeed a blessing. I had a real opportunity to have a good life here with an even better woman. With my engineering skills and other knowledge that I gained back on Earth, I would be able to build an awesome house, one that would be able to withstand just about anything the humans of this world and creatures of the Underdark could throw at it. "All right, Nika," I said. "I will build a warren for our new family, and it will be the best goddamned warren you have ever seen."
"Oh, Kenjul,"
she sprang toward me and wrapped me up in a loving embrace.
"You make me so happy. Everything will be all right. You will see."
We ate our grilled fish, but Nika was still hungry, so she fished in the river while I broke down our camp. She was becoming pretty good at it, and had caught a dozen big fat trout by the time I had stuffed everything back into my molly pack. There were still glowing coals in the fire pit, and I was about to suggest that we smoke the fish before we headed out, but when Nika began eating one of the fish raw, I realized that they wouldn't last very long. "You hungry?" I asked sarcastically as I watched her stuff her face with trout.
"Like a basilisk," she said with her mouth full. "But these fish will do for now. Do you want one?"
"No, you go ahead. I'm not hungry," I told her as I scoured the surrounding landscape. Our little camp was in a nice spot, but it was too close to the cave where we had emerged from the Underdark, so I decided to search for a more suitable location. I led Nika downriver for a half of an hour in search of an ideal place to set up camp. To the north, the ridgeline continued to dip and swell, and the river widened as we moved farther west with the current. I had no idea which direction the ocean or the village of Hampstead was, but I knew that both were no farther than 10 miles away. Nika and I had traveled through the Underdark for about 2 hours, and the going had been tedious and slow. "Come on," I said. "Let's climb that tall hill and see if we can get a lay of the land."
"Lead the way,"
she said as she happily licked her fingers. "Holy shit," I said when I noticed that all the fish were gone. "Did you really just eat 12 trout?
"Yep,"
she said as she contently rubbed her belly.
"The baby is so hungry. He is going to be big and strong, you wait and see."
"He?"
"Oh, yes. We will need a boy to help with work, so I will give you a boy first."
"First?" I laughed. "Just how many babies are you planning on having?"
"As many as I can, silly,"
I laughed nervously. "Do you think it's a good idea to have more children than we can manage?" I asked.
"Kenjul, why do you feel that children will be a burden? I have told you that our children will be very strong and helpful. The more we have, the better our warren will be. Trust me."
I wasn't sure that I agreed with her yet, but that was still in the future, and for the time being I had more pressing matters to deal with. The hill was steep but manageable, and when we reached the summit, I moved in a slow circle to get my bearings. The ridge that I stood on slowly descended to the north, and a wide field of grass with sparse trees continued down to a distant valley. I thought I could make out civilization far across the valley, and I guessed the village to be Hampstead. It was about 10 miles away, and there were no roads that I could see leading in this direction. With any luck, we might be able to find some peace, but I still intended on adding heavy fortifications to the house once we found a good spot. There were other things to worry about besides humans and wild animals. We had left the cave a few miles behind us, but if a monster raiding party came out of there some night, we might be in trouble.
"I found something,"
Nika hollered from farther down the ridge. I rushed over to her, not knowing if she meant she had found a creature. But it wasn't a creature. It was the remains of a long-abandoned human house.
"Did I do good?"
she asked, her voice laced with hope.
"You did great,"
I said as I surveyed the ruins. The stone foundation was flat, and a half-wall about 3 feet tall sat in varying degrees of disrepair. Around the perimeter of the foundation, but it would be an easy enough job to fix it. There was also a wide fireplace and a chimney that appeared to be functional. To the west, between the ridge and the river, there were 3 terraced fields that had once upon a time been used for growing crops. The fields had gone fallow, but with some TLC, I had no doubt that they would become bountiful once more. The homestead also had a foundation outline of what I guessed had once been a barn, and I walked around it before I returned to the house. The spot sat on the south side of the ridge, about 20 feet from the peak, and that would keep it hidden from the people of distant Hampstead. I climbed again to the top of the ridge and spied the distant village to the north once more. Far out on the western horizon, I thought I saw the ocean. To the south was the river and forest beyond, but no houses, villages, or towns. To the east was more forest, and also the cave where we had emerged from the Underdark. "This is perfect," I told Nika. "We have to make sure that there are no holes leading to the Underdark nearby."
"I can search for them," she offered.
As Nika set out to explore the area around the old homestead, I started to set up our temporary shelter. I cleaned out the fireplace, made sure that the chimney was unobstructed, and then started a small fire. Next, I set about fixing the broken parts of the walls. The entire foundation was 15 by 20 feet, and I figured that was more than enough room for our purposes at the moment. I unearthed a hole carved out of the stone that I quickly realized had supported the structure's center beam. There were also anchoring spots on each corner, and 4 more dug into the middle of each of the 4 walls. It was a good start, but I had my work cut out for me. Not only would I have to fell a shit ton of trees, but I would have to plane the logs and cure them somehow. The roof was going to be a lot of work, too. Besides that, I needed to set up a wall, booby traps, and other fortifications. We were close enough to the river to not have to worry about a well, but given how dangerous this place had already proven to be, I wanted to create a home where we could hold out for weeks if need be, and that meant having our own water supply at home. The more I thought about everything I needed to do, the more I realized that I didn't even have half of the tools that I was going to need. At some point, I was going to have to go to Hampstead or some other village for supplies and tools. Given how quickly Nika had wolfed down the 12 trout, it seemed that I would need to procure much more food than I could get by fishing and trapping alone. I thought about foraging for extra food, but ruled it out for the time being. This world was a lot like Earth, but it was a hell of a lot different in other ways, and I wasn't about to risk eating wild berries or mushrooms that I thought were safe. Maybe I could procure some seeds in a nearby village that could provide us with the vegetables we would need to maintain a balanced diet, but for now, we were going to have to get by on fish and whatever else I could catch. Nika returned an hour later and reported that she hadn't found any entrances to the Underdark. She rubbed her stomach when she said it, and I thought that it already looked a little bigger. "Are you hungry again?" I asked.
"No, but the baby is,"
she replied with a mischievous grin. "Oh yeah? Does the baby want more fish?"
"Yes, many, many more fish," she nodded happily. "Why don't you go catch some more and I'll tidy up the house?"
"Sounds like a plan," I said as I guided her through the break in the wall where the door had once sat. "But first I want to show you what I have in mind. This stone wall is in good shape, but so are the fireplace and chimney. I plan on replacing the walls, obviously, but I want to dig out a root cellar as well. I'll need to build an outhouse, too, and a shed or a barn wouldn't hurt."
"What is an outhouse?" she asked.
"A place to go to the bathroom," I explained.
"What is a bathroom?"
"A place to shit," I explained bluntly.
"Oh,"
she said as she scrunched up her cute little nose.
"That is a good idea. In the Goblin City we have holes in the stone that go down hundreds of feet called poop chutes."
I chuckled and planted a kiss on her cheek. "Nika, I don't have the tools to build the house properly, so I have to go into one of the nearby human villages and get some."
"Like Hampstead? That sounds dangerous. Should I make you a disguise?"
"Wouldn't hurt. I sure can't go to the village dressed like this. But, Nika, it worries me to think of leaving you out here all alone. What if—"
"I'm a goblin, silly, and we are experts at hiding and sneaking. Tomorrow you should go to town for supplies and not worry. Today you should catch more fish. Okay?"
"All right, that sounds like a good plan." I agreed and kissed her on the cheek. While Nika tidied up the shell of our future home, I went back down to the river to catch more fish. If this morning was any indication, she and the baby were going to need a boatload more, and I made a mental note to buy a net, since the kobold net was unfortunately too big to catch fish with. I knew I was a pretty good angler, but catching enough fish with poles was going to be tedious, and I had a million other things that I needed to do already. At the bottom of the hill, I noticed a patch of clover that appeared to have been munched on, so I made a quick detour to search for a rabbit den. I didn't find any in the immediate vicinity, but I figured there might be hares around, so I put down my molly pack and took out the snare line. I figured that if there were any rabbits about, they would go through the underbrush leading to the clovers from the forest. I found exactly what I was looking for after a quick search. There was a small game trail leading from the forest through the underbrush, and I carefully set a hoop snare along the path. Content with my work, I returned to the river and dug up more worms. 2 hours later, I returned to the future site of our home and found that Nika had fashioned a broom by attaching some stiff grass to a tree branch with some sort of thin vine. She sang to herself as she swept the floor. And when she saw me, she lit up. Or maybe it was the 15 fish I was carrying.
"Oh, good," she said. "I'm so hungry. You're such a good provider."
"I thought it was the baby who was hungry," I teased.
"Him too,"
she said as she grabbed one of the fish hanging from my line and bit off its head. "You mind if I cook some of these up?" I asked. "I'm a fan of sushi and all, but I prefer them cooked."
"I don't know what sushi is, but I'll clean them for you while you get more firewood," she offered.
"Thanks." I handed her the fish and wondered if any of them were going to make it to the fire, and then made my way back down the hill. I checked my snare wire while I was out, but to my dismay I hadn't caught anything yet. If I could catch a rabbit, not only would we have another source of food, but we would be able to use the hide as well. I didn't know if this planet had seasons or not, or if I was near the equator, but I thought it couldn't hurt to prepare just in case winter was on its way. Maybe in town I could learn more, but it would be tricky to work the idea of winter into a conversation if the seasons never actually changed, and it would immediately mark me as an outsider. The nearby forest offered a plethora of dead wood, and I stacked up a big pile close to the river. Then I used my finger saw to cut down a few small oak trees for larger firewood and hacked off what limbs I could with my spade. The larger branches required the finger saw again, but soon I had 4 20-foot-long trees and a pile of branches. I went through the stack with the shovel again and hacked off the small branches that would come in handy when setting up the new lean-to. Once I had prepared the trees and branches for transport, I returned to our site and dropped off my molly pack. It took me 5 trips up and down the hill to transport all the wood, and when I finished, I plopped down on the half wall of the cabin and drank greedily from the water tube that connected to my pack. In the time it had taken me to haul the firewood to the site, Nika had cleaned all the fish and laid them out on a smooth stone. She had also found time to fashion herself a skirt out of long woven grass.
"Do you like it?"
she asked as she twirled for me. When she did so, the leaf skirt fanned out and gave me a peek of her toned green ass. "It looks great. How did you make that so fast?"
"I've been making my own clothes all my life, silly. Every goblin knows how to do it, or else they just go naked. You can tell who is not very smart by how well their clothes are made,"
she explained as she gestured at me.
"When I saw you in your clothes, I knew right away that you were very smart."
"Sorry to burst your bubble, babe, but I didn't make these clothes for myself," I admitted. She frowned, but then her features brightened.
"Oh," she said, "you must have been very rich on Earth, or else a king. Were you a king?"
"No, I told you I was, I mean, I am a warrior."
"Then who made your clothes?"
I shrugged. "I guess factory workers, you know, people who are very good at it. Everyone where I come from usually has one job, and some people's job is to make clothes. We have entire stores full of outfits, but most clothes are made by people in other countries."
"Are they your slaves? Are they people you have conquered?"
"What? No, they get paid for their work. But not much, I guess." She shook her head.
Earth sounds like a very strange place to me. You are lucky you are here instead, Ken Jewel.
All I know is that I'm lucky to have met you, Nika. I forced myself to get up from the half wall and stoke the fire I'd started earlier. The fireplace was nearly 2 feet wide and offered ample room, but we didn't need a big fire, just enough to cook the fish over. The night before had been mild, perhaps 65 degrees, and Nika and I had stayed warm beneath my military-issue blanket. Once the fire was going and the fish were cooking, I started work on the new lean-to. I wedged 3 of the straight branches that I had procured into the eastern wall and made sure to keep the center pole slightly taller than the 2 outlying poles in case of rain. Then I tied the end of my tarp to the poles with rope, spread it across the frame of the house beside the fire, and attached it to the half wall. The resulting shelter wasn't permanent, but it would do for now. There was no indication of rain coming, and even if it did, we would stay dry beneath the tarp against the shelter of the half wall. Satisfied with our camp so far, I sat down with Nika and ate fish on the hill overlooking the river. It had been a long day, but both suns were still out. I noticed that they were roughly in the same position in the sky as they had been the day before when I fell into the ocean, and I consulted my watch. 48 hours had passed on Earth since I got here, but only 1 daily cycle had transpired on this strange new planet. No wonder I felt so bushed. I had a serious case of interplanetary jet lag. After we ate, I decided to take a nap, and Nika insisted on massaging my tired feet. Before she got started, I realized that I needed to make some sort of bed for us. Nika had already started working on a woven mattress, but it was going to take some time before that was ready. In the meantime, I had an idea. I retrieved the net that the kobolds had used to try to trap me and held it over the fire with a stick until I got the stink out. It needed a good washing, but for now, fumigating it would do. I used a few of my straight branches to make 2 stabilizer bars, 1 on each end of the big net, and then tied off both ends to the half wall with my rope. The result was a hammock cocoon of pure bliss, and I happily sank into it as Nika took off my boots and began rubbing my feet. Then I was out in a matter of seconds. I had hoped for dreamless sleep, but ever since my first tour in Afghanistan, nightmares had haunted my rest. This time I dreamed of an angry mob of pitchfork-wielding villagers chasing Nika and me through the forest. The angry voices of goblins soon joined the humans, and they demanded that we hand over the baby. Nika's belly was fat and swollen, and as we ran through the underbrush and tangling vines, she started to go into labor. "Give us the child," the goblins chanted. "Burn the traitor! Kill the goblin!" the humans countered. Nika stumbled, and I took her up in my arms so that we could get away. I pumped my legs and urged my body on faster, but it was no use. It seemed that the harder I tried, the slower I went, and I soon found myself slogging through thick mud. A giant basilisk suddenly appeared in front of me, and I screamed as it sprang toward us. "Nika!" I awoke with a start and swung for the imagined basilisk. It was a dream, of course, and I sighed with relief as I lay there in the hammock. Nika strode in then with a handful of long reeds, shook her head, and put down her load.
"What are you doing, silly? You should be sleeping."
"Bad dream."
"Aww,"
she said as she reached out her fingers and scratched through my thick hair. The feeling was exquisite, but I knew I should be getting to work. "I'm okay," I said as I looked up into her beautiful face. "Thanks for the scalp massage."
"Of course, Ken Jewel. That is why I am here, to take care of you, make you food, make you clothes, and make you lots of strong babies. I'll get back to work."
I untangled my feet and shook off the final remnants of sleep. Then I took a long drink and poured some water over my face. As I pulled myself together, I glanced at the suns. One was a few hours from setting, and the other was just a little bit past noon. It looked like I had napped for about 6 hours, but I felt like I had been blindsided by a truck and just woke up from a 3-month-long coma. I didn't know if my exhaustion was from the heat of the Holy Twins or some kind of UV rays that I was unaware of. Maybe it was just hunger. It was a challenge to eat enough fish to replace the calories I was burning each day.
"Are you hungry?" Nika asked. "I cooked up the croc meat. It's on the stone by the fire."
"Oh, man. Thanks, Nika," I said as I eagerly moved to the fireplace and sat down to eat.
"You are welcome," she replied. "I know that to have a strong warren, it must have a strong leader."
Nika had grilled the croc meat on long pine branch skewers balanced on rocks beside the fireplace. It was a little tough, but it had a hint of chicken flavor that I enjoyed, and I felt much better after I had filled my belly. My stomach replenished, I set about my tasks for the day. I still had a lot of work to do, and night would be upon us sooner rather than later. The croc meat and water had squelched my immediate hunger, but my mind was still on food. I remembered my snare wire, told Nika I would be right back, and raced down the hill. When the snare came into sight, my excitement died. From my angle, it looked like I hadn't caught anything, but then my eyes widened as I moved closer and beheld my catch. Caught up in the snare was a big, fat brown rabbit, and the catch caused me to give a triumphant whoop as I hurried to untie my snare. I raced back up the hill to show Nika, and when she laid eyes on the catch, she burst with joy.
"Yay," she cheered. "But what is that monster?"
"This, my love, is a rabbit. Trust me, you're going to love it." Before I cleaned the hair, I wanted to build a proper table. I had gathered about a dozen wrist-thick branches that would work well enough, so I set about the task of preparing them. With my finger saw, I cut the wood poles down to about 2.5 feet long. Nika used my survival knife to shave off the bark and the more stubborn knots, and soon we had 10 pieces for the tabletop. Next, I sawed 4 thicker branches down to 2 feet. These would act as the legs. Once the pieces were the correct length, I cut 2 more branches to support the tabletop from underneath. While I had been sleeping, Nika had spent her time finishing the bed and weaving vines and grass into strong cordage. I thanked my lucky stars again for the brilliant goblin woman and used some of her rope to secure the branches for the tabletop. As I tied the cordage, Nika offered me some good ideas about how best to wrap the wood together. Her advice was clever, and an hour after we had begun, our table was done. We still needed chairs, but the table would do for now. "All right," I said as I rubbed my hands together. "Let me show you how to skin a rabbit." Nika watched me cut the skin off intently, but I had a feeling she could have performed the task easily. Once the hide was removed, she set it on the drying rack next to the crocodile skin, and I started to quarter the hair. I would have liked to make a stew, but I didn't want to risk eating anything that I wasn't familiar with. I had seen what looked like leeks, and then there was the clover patch, but for all I knew, such plants were poisonous here. "Hey, Nika, do you know anything about the plants on the surface? Like what is all right to eat or not?" I asked.
"Oh, I don't know much about the plants here in the sunlight. In the underdark, we eat mostly mushrooms and meat. Sometimes the males who go raiding brought my father different food from the surface, but he usually kept it all for himself or used it to impress his stupid friends."
Once the rabbit was ready, we skewered it with sticks and set it over the fire to cook. Soon, the thin white meat began to sweat its aromatic juices, and the scent made my mouth water like a hungry dog's. I pulled it off the fire 20 minutes later, unable to wait any longer. Then I handed Nika a stick with a thigh on it and took the other one for myself. We blew on the food, smiled at each other, and then laughed when I huffed on my scalding first bite. I juggled it around in my mouth while she giggled at my antics, and then I laughed at her when she did the same. The rabbit was greasy and delicious, but I wished we had another 6 or so of them to eat. We finished off the rabbit meat and watched as the first sun set in the west. The tops of puffy clouds burst with violet and dark blue that changed to yellow, orange, and fiery red toward the bottoms. Together, the 2 suns were as bright as my own, but with only 1 in the sky, a slight twilight descended upon the new world. Content with our most recent meal, Nika and I got back to work. I fashioned a pair of chairs out of my straight branches and Nika's cordage while she continued to weave her vines and grass. The conversation turned to my home and my parents, and I did my best to keep the information on a narrow path where I could easily explain my soldier job without all the political aspects. By nightfall, Nika had finished the bed. It consisted of 2 7-by-5-foot grass-woven sheets with soft grass sandwiched in the middle. The padding was about 6 inches thick, and she had even made a couple of woven pillows to go with it. I had been hard at work digging a shithole in a box made from branches to act as a toilet seat. Nika's cordage came in handy again, and I used it to secure the branches that acted as the walls of the outhouse. The finished product wasn't anything you'd see in Better Homes and Garden, but it got the job done. All that was missing was toilet paper, so I had to settle for some tufts of balled-up grass instead. With my outhouse complete and the day slowly waning, I focused on setting up some tripwires that would alert us to anyone or anything approaching our little homestead. I didn't have enough rope in my pack to cover my needs, but the vines that Nika had been working with were thin and strong, and she had gathered enough of it for me to use. All I needed was something loud enough to act as an alarm. What I really wanted were some jingle bells or an air horn, but I had to settle for something more primitive. I went down to the river, found 2 nice big round stones, and hauled them back up to our site. Next, I fashioned 2 deadfall traps out of my straight branches, and I positioned the traps just a few feet from our site, where the hill began. It took some doing, but I finally got them right and carefully rested the round stones up against the thin slabs held up by the trap. I then laid out my extra tarp on the hill just below the balanced stones. If all went according to plan, when something tripped the line, the deadfall traps would spring and the round stones would roll over the tarp and make a thunderous racket, which would alert me to the presence of any trespassers nearby. I ran the vine cordage down the side of the hill, across the face, and back up the other side. Then I carefully tied off the line to the sticks holding the deadfalls. It took a few tries to get it balanced correctly, but it was soon set up just as I wanted. Next, I went down to the river and used the cordage to fashion 2 similar trip lines, one about 50 yards upriver and the other 50 yards downriver. But these trip lines I rigged to hold up heavy logs balanced on the shore of the water. If the trip lines did their job, when they were activated, the logs would be released and drop into the river. I was a light sleeper and certain that I would be able to hear the disturbance. When our work was done, we swam in the river as the second sun chased its twin over the western horizon, and we made love by the fire. A calm contentment settled over me that night as we lay on our new bed. Maybe it was having a place to call home. Maybe it was having a woman who loved me under my arm. Whatever this feeling was, I never wanted it to go away, and a dreamless sleep soon pulled me down into Nika's warm embrace. But my sleep didn't last long, and I awoke in the middle of the night to the sound of a log crashing into the river. There was someone near our camp.
Chapter 6.
The sound of the log alarms had been faint, but I was sure I'd heard it, so I sprang from bed and doused the small fire with water. As it died with a hiss, I moved to the doorway of the structure and military crawled to the edge of the hill. Nika woke up and slowly crept to my side, and I placed a finger to my lips to indicate for her to be quiet. She understood the gesture, and we watched and listened. Faint voices rode up the hillside. They were human voices, but I couldn't make out what they were saying. The red moon illuminated the thick clouds above with a crimson hue, but left the rest of the world in darkness. I let my eyes adjust for a few minutes as we listened, and soon I could make out the outlines of trees and a few other landmarks.
"I don't think they saw our fire," I whispered, "but it sounds like they've stopped for the night. Probably by the river. I'm going to go down and investigate. You should."
"I'm coming too,"
she whispered, and the look on her face told me not to argue with her.
"All right, hold on,"
I told her before I crawled back to camp to grab my utility belt and gun. When I returned to her side, she grinned from ear to ear and brandished my pocket knife.
"We're not killing anyone if we don't have to. Understand?"
I told her. She frowned, then nodded.
All right, Kanjul. In the Underdark, killing people and taking their stuff is the best way to get loot. But you are my husband, so I'll do as you ask.
We quietly moved down the hill, careful.